Welcome to the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. Have you ever wondered how people succeed in real estate and what steps they took to get there? If so, this podcast is for you. Your hosts, Sayla and Eileen Prack, interview top experts in the real estate community to share with you their real estate journey and how they achieved massive success. Our goal is to provide you with valuable real estate resources and to help you apply it to your own real estate goal. Welcome to today's episode of the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Eileen Prack. And today, our guest is Chris Linger. And he is a principal at Upplex and an accredited real estate investor who's been investing in real estate since 2006. He and his wife transitioned from a small rental portfolio to managing over 1,750 apartments across 9 different apartment syndications, totaling $270 million. He's also a Navy veteran, holds an MBA, and co-owns a company focused on real estate asset management, equity raising, and private money lending. He's also joint ventured in self-storage facilities and mobile home parks valued at over $5 million. So Chris, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Eileen. Appreciate it.
So Chris, can you please share a little bit more about your background and how you got started with real estate?
Oh, absolutely. So getting started, that was a, I guess I'll say landlord by accident. I was active duty military, bought a home in an area, moved out in 2007. And couldn't sell it. So I rented it out for a little while and I caught that landlord bug, right? Had somebody else pay that mortgage. 2017, I met my now wife and we grew that portfolio from what was 4 doors up to 35 by 2020 by working as a team. And what we found was you only know what you know. And when you come in together with one other person, you only know what the two of you know. And then we found masterminds in 2020. We knew about syndications, but we didn't know that process so well. So we started listening to podcasts, listening to different avenues of getting education. And then we bought into paid mentorship, learned the syndication model. And now we're actually in 1,900 apartments as general partners and $300 million in assets. So the growth itself came from not really sitting down and resting, right? We took a lot of action. Every weekend, I was on the West Coast. My wife was on the East Coast, and our portfolio was in Austin at the time. So every weekend or every other weekend, at least one of us would be flying back into Austin to show face, make sure people saw us there, keep an eye on the product, and make sure that we had good relations. The overall growth has come because we have such an extensive background in real estate, just very long term, that we've got a lot of different things that we've been through, a lot of different steps that we can help others avoid. And it gives us a nice security, I guess I'll say, to lenders and stuff like that, because we have that experience of self-managing. We know and understand our property managers as well on the new apartment complexes and things like that. We understand the struggles they have in making sure the bills are paid, making sure we have turns done, getting in that next person. And so, all of these experiences come together, but it's also at the same time, it's not a requirement for somebody to have that experience in order to get started in syndications. Because as we mentioned, or as you've mentioned previously, it's a team sport. And so you find the people with the experience to help out and you can learn along the way, just like we did.
So kind of tugging along those lines a little bit then, based off of your experience and what you've seen so far, I've heard a lot of people say you should start as big as you can. Like, doesn't matter the size of the doors, go for 100 plus units. What is your take on that?
My overall take would be that to look at 80 doors and above. And the reason I say that is because those can afford to have property management. And you have a little bit of wiggle room in if things don't go quite perfectly, right? You're not at 97% occupied all the times. Maybe there's something, a water line breaks or something. You can afford to still pay all the bills, including property management. But most importantly, you'll have property management on site for most of them that are 80 doors and above. The hardest part to that is probably raising capital and making sure the lender is comfortable with you when you haven't had something of that size before. So we do know some people that have bought 20 units and then they went to a 30 and a 60 and then they went up to the bigger stuff. They also generally will tend to buy some of the smaller items the smaller assets, and then they'll partner with people who have done the bigger stuff before. So I don't say run from it. You know, don't feel like it's out of reach, because it's not. It is possible. It just depends on, for you buying it yourself, whether you have the capital to do it, the experience to make a lender feel comfortable, and the time to manage, right? To asset manage. If you don't have one of those three things, then you need a partner who does have that, who fills that other void, or partners if necessary. And so when you're looking for your first product, you do want to find something that you feel is almost manageable for you, and you can bring in one or two or three other people depending on that size. We know a lot of people that start off looking at $80 and $90 million product, and I'm like, I don't know that you're going to be able to pull that down by yourself as a first deal, but $8 or $9 million product, you might be able to. I love to think bigger. I love to think that that's possible. And what I will say is, it was through networking that we got our first two deals. We were looking at $3 and $6 million deals, and we ended up closing on a $23 and a $26 million deal were our first ones. But it was through networking and building that team that made the difference for us when we switched over to the syndication side.
So for those first two deals, to breaking into that and networking, can you share what are the fundamentals that you had to set into place to build that foundation up, potential partners, and getting into such a large deal, especially the first two ones that you guys did?
Yeah. So in trying to build our team and knowing where we wanted to go, what I'll say is, it's action is a big factor, but intention is also another. And so if you go into these conversations with people in the industry, people that you are just meeting, but you go in with the intention of, I would like to figure out whether I could partner with that person or not, your conversation changes. It's a much more focused conversation. And I don't want it to sound like it's not genuine, because it is. I genuinely want to find a partner, right? I want to make sure that we can do business together. But your level of depth that you go into is far different than if you just meet up with somebody on the street and you know they're in real estate, but you're like, hey, how's your property going? What's going on? You know, everything good? And it's just kind of cursory, right? It's very social. But if you go into it with intention, then you start asking, well, how is your product? How is your asset performing? What's your history? What have you done? Are you on the loan? Are you not on the loan? We've had open conversations where towards the end of the conversation, first time having a conversation with them, and we're like, if you don't mind me asking, what's your net worth? What kind of liquidity do you have? Because I would contemplate partnering with you, but I want to make sure that we could both sign on the loan, that we're both going to add value to the property. And so it's a possibility to do that, but you have to be intentional. You have to be comfortable. And you can usually tell if somebody else is getting pretty comfortable with you. But yeah, that's essentially when you're trying to build that out, you need to be intentional. You need to take massive action. We were reaching out to, I'll say we were reaching out to probably 15 to 20 people a week. We were intentional to make sure we had 10 calls a week so that we could really get networking with people and figure out, okay, who can we have a second call with? What areas are they in? Do we align in the things that we want to buy? So just a couple little helpful hints.
It's so interesting, right? Especially in our culture, sometimes the talk of money and net worth, liquidity, it's almost like a taboo in a sense. But when you get into this business, it becomes very open, and you know, partners know exactly your net worth. You're signing on the loans. They see what you make. They know your liquidity. And so that topic no longer becomes like an off topic. It's like a must, a requirement to know going into the partnerships.
Yeah. And especially going into this industry, you should have some sort of an idea of what your net worth is. You should have your bio ready to go. Even if you don't own any properties, put together your resume that you're going to call your real estate bio. And how does your history, background, experience relate to where you're going forward? If you work in business as an entrepreneur, you can help with the business plan. You can help monitor the accounting. You can do all kinds of different stuff. And if you're a W-2 worker, our avatar, our people that we talk to the most are health professionals or highly taxed professionals that are just overworked. And the only way they get a check is that they have to show up every day to the office. And so we work, our conversations are geared in that direction to help them to step away a half a day at a time. If we can get you investing this amount, it could give you passive income equal to whatever you make doing clinic visits for a couple of days or a half a day or whatever. And eventually that snowballs, right? So just more conversations to have along the way, because when you're talking about partners, you're also talking about potential investors at the same time.
So especially being that the first two deals that you did were, you know, in the $20 million plus range, what was some of the activities that you needed to do to work with the partnerships to close the deal and to provide the value as well into something so large? And what were some of the things that going into as a general partner was eye-opening for you?
The eye-opening side, I'll answer that first probably. Probably the amount of time that was actually spent 2-3 months before you close on that deal. The amount of time you spend in due diligence, on phone calls with lenders, making sure legal is good, getting the paperwork ready, talking to your investors. All of that time, I think some of us heading into it the first time, you discount it a little bit. You're like, oh, all that stuff just kind of happens, right? Well, it does, unless you really want to participate fully and learn out of this process and understand the process from day one. And so we were involved with all of our calls, which I'll say probably three of them a week for things, three, maybe four of them a week to with the service providers, the vendors, the property management, due diligence, whatever, for 2-3 months, you know, and then on top of that, you're raising capital. And so that kind of settles that part of the time thing. As far as one of the surprises or one of the things that we added coming into the deal. So everybody on a general partnership team should be able to raise capital. That's a given. We don't get equity out of the money we raise. It's a given that everybody's going to be raising capital. So for our very first deal that closed, we are actually the boots on the ground. So we live local in Austin, Texas. The deal was in Austin, and that was through our networking previously. They came back around and said, hey, we would like to partner with you guys. You're the only ones that are going to be local. So it was kind of our in, right? And so as we're trying to build in that networking process that we talked about earlier, talk about what you do and what you can bring to a team is another thing. I apologize for not mentioning that earlier. But that was a large part of what we brought. And then on top of that, right now, with the way interest rates are in 2024, 23 and 24, deals are getting much leaner in what they're able to do, what they're able to provide out to investors. And so we're finding ourselves on that property more and more as a team, as well as ourselves as the boots on the ground. We're going in and making sure that everything is as beneficial, efficient, whatever you want to say, that the turns are happening how they're supposed to be, the quality's there, that we can raise rents or at least keep them flat, meaning no change from renewals. But our product that's there is comprehensive to the units and assets that are nearby, that we're meeting the need for the tenant. Because if we meet the tenant's needs, then we'll meet the property needs and we'll meet the investor needs.
So then from there, how did you get into your next couple of deals from there? Because from when you first started to today, it's not a very long time to be able to do that many deals. So how were you able to complete or be a part of this many syndications in this short amount of time?
Part of it is our ability to do the things that we need to do for a property from anywhere. You know, being able to be on property management calls, having the background that, like I mentioned earlier, of managing ourselves, we give a different insight to how to manage a property or a different insight to the business plan. In the overall, much of it boiled down to the network again. They saw what we're doing, they saw what we can do, and they wanted us to try to help them in their journey. However, what I will say is our third deal that we did, we actually found it ourselves. We sourced it. We built our own team. So that one, you know, we took all the people that we have networked with before, and we said, okay, who can help where? One of which was signing on a loan, helping out in that capacity. They are also great business people that give another insight that they have like 25 years of business background. I do have an MBA. I understand the numbers. I understand all that stuff. That's my side of it, is acquisitions and the asset management. And so it's easier for me to see it, but it's also nice to have another set of eyes. And that's where some of these teams get built as well, is a little bit of redundancy so that you're not just, you're the only set of eyes. And the other one is filling in gaps.
So once you identified a property, you're looking at it, you're doing the due diligence on it. One of the big components of really understanding what you're getting into, what you're purchasing, is the walkthrough with the property management company, with your team members as well. What are some of the things that you typically look for as you're walking through unit by unit, walking the grounds, looking at things, and whether or not it would make sense or make or break a deal?
There's not a whole lot that will make or break a deal when we're doing our due diligence. It's more of, will the seller flex? In general, we won't ask for anything less than, I'll say, $500,000 to $700,000 discount. So if we find something that is relatively small, we'll just say on a $20 million property, a $200,000 item, we probably worked it into our CapEx plan to some extent that we could absorb that, or we can modify our CapEx plan, capital expenditures plan, to be able to accommodate that extra $200,000, and it still won't change the returns a whole lot. But we have had where it was advertised the roof is only 5 years old. And we're like, okay, we don't even have to think about the roof. But this was a 200-unit property, so a new roof is like almost $300,000-$400,000, depending. And I don't know what they did, but it was just in bad shape. It was in bad shape. And we actually had two providers come out to look at the roof, because we were like, we can't go back to them when they're saying it's a five-year-old roof. And so they weren't willing to flex. And what we found out was it was like almost 18 months later, they sold it for about $3 or $4 million less than what we had originally offered to decrease the price to. So sometimes you got to take those things in with a grain of salt. We said, okay, you know, have a great day, whatever. But when we're actually walking, I would say we did walk away from a property that it had units inside of each of the apartments. It had air handlers inside, and they each had their own furnace in there, basically a heat pump. And I opened up one of the closets and I closed it down, and there's nothing in there about there being any heat issues or air conditioning issues. So I asked the broker as we're walking through, and I'm looking in each closet. He doesn't pick up on it. And my question to him was, are all of these air conditioning units, air handlers, working? Are they all functional, fully functional? He's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, we just have a couple of them have window units because they're a little more efficient. This is an older unit, a little more efficient. I said, okay, great. So we looked at a couple more, and I'll say we probably walked in about seven of those apartments out of, I don't know, 80 apartments. And afterwards I said, listen, you need to be open and honest with folks, because when you don't even have a gas line hooked up to a furnace, I can't believe that it works. And he kind of was looking back at me like he didn't know what I was talking about. And so I broke it down to him in the same way that I'm telling you here is, I'm looking at it, you're telling me it functions, but there's no way it could possibly function. So obviously something's wrong, and we're going to have to do a significant overhaul on the air conditioning, air handler. So I will say, I guess there are some reasons to walk away from a deal, because that's just, it was too much to overcome because it was most of the apartments.
So Chris, where do you see the market, especially over the next couple of years? Like, what is your next focus?
We're still focused on multifamily. We really do expect to be able to pick up some stuff over the next 2 years. The difference will be that sale price that was an expectation to be able to sell in the 24, 25 mark timeframe. That might be a little different than what the expectation was, but we do expect to still be able to pick some up, because many of the assets that are out there that we're doing floating rate debt, they either have to pay a significantly higher rate cap, which is the insurance to not pay such the full amount of market interest. And that's a big price tag right now that nobody underwrote to. And even in Texas and Florida, insurance rates have gone up quite a bit. Again, not something people underwrote to have such a massive jump of 30 or 40% on your insurance rates. So with those two combined, it's causing properties to not be funded enough because they weren't able to drive their rents high enough to stay ahead of these problems or ahead of these expense increases that they weren't underwriting to. And so that's an opportunity for us to pick up a deal today for $13 million that 2 years ago would have sold for 21 or 25. Well, guess what? In 26 or 27, those deals will probably be back to worth 21 or 25. So that's kind of the outlook that we have. That's where we're headed over the next 2 years. We do plan to pick up some opportunities. And by buying them at a lower basis, that is hopefully what I would really like to do is I'd love to get the previous owner's equity back for their investors, but it's not necessarily appropriate, right? We have a fiduciary responsibility to our investors to get the best deal possible and make sure we take care of them on the back end. And so with that, we're looking at what does the property support today for debt at today's interest rate? And that's the price that we're looking at purchasing these products at.
So Chris, how has real estate investing impacted your life?
Oh man. So I was a military nurse. Before that, I was enlisted. I was a military medical professional in the Navy. And upon retirement, my expectation was that I would do the standard W-2 job, go work in a hospital somewhere near my kids. And in 2017, like I mentioned, I met my wife and my entire outlook of everything changed. We both clicked on the concept of owning property, investing, and growing our net worth, wealth, and ability to help others. And we've been 100% on board the whole way, like on the same game plan the whole way. So it has changed our lives to the point that now we give back to the communities. We come on the podcast and talk to people, try to help raise their awareness, their education, whatever it is. We have different free events. We've got a YouTube channel that we put stuff on so people can get information as well. And it's just become more of a lifestyle of giving back than it has been for working. Right. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Like we don't take our eye off the assets. I'm in those management software. I'm on phone calls several times a week in all these cases that we still have plenty of time to be able to give back to everybody, to be able to give back to many, I should say. I won't say everybody because, you know, that's a little far, but it's not impossible to make it happen either. Right. It has completely changed our life. We now have one of our daughters is working for us. She works for our company part-time. So we're excited to be able to grow this and hopefully sustain it beyond.
No, it's become a family business now.
Yep.
That's fantastic. And what is the one thing that you know now about real estate that you wish you knew when you first started?
You don't have to start small. Being military, we have access to the VA home loans. 0% down, 100% financed. Why would I buy a single family home? And that's what I did each time. I should have bought a quadplex. That's the biggest that you can buy with that loan. Should have bought a quadplex or at least a duplex. Rent out the other units, lived in one of them, and you can pretty much live for free if your rent is set right. And so that whole time you could pocket your housing allowance. The military gives a special housing allowance. Well, if you leave and you rent that out, that apartment out, now you're making money. All the bills are still paid. Had I done that from day one, it would be a totally different story today. You're right. I didn't hear about even buying homes and keeping them when you leave. I didn't even hear anything about that until I was about 11 years into the military. And I did 26 and a half. And unfortunately, I was overseas for much of the remainder of the time. And so I literally only had one home that I kept long term, and I would have picked up more and they would have been bigger units. And eventually we would have moved past the fourplexes it would have just significantly grown net worth. On my last tour, my wife and I bought 6 properties in 1 year. And because it seemed like every other month we were buying something, one of my coworkers called me Chris Trump, just being funny. But I was like, you know what? I'm not offended. I'm not at all offended. I would love to have a portfolio that's worth $300 million or $3 billion or whatever. And $300 million was our 10-year goal, and we reached it in 2.5. So it really is about taking action, being intentional across a long period of time, and being genuine, you know, talking to people. We kind of have a philosophy we picked up from one of our mentors of treat everyone as if they're a millionaire. Give everybody that same respect that you would give anybody else who's a millionaire, a decamillionaire, a billionaire. Give them that same respect. And it opens doors all the way along.
So, Chris, where can our listeners find out more about you and what you're doing?
Probably the easiest way is on Instagram at PopsREI. You're always welcome to go to our website, up-plex.com. That's upplex.com. And you can reach out and find us in either one of those spots. That's the easiest way to reach out to me.
Fantastic. Chris, thank you so much for all of your time today. I appreciate you coming on and sharing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to our podcast today, brought to you by Bonavest Capital. We would really appreciate it if you can go to iTunes right now and leave a rating and written review. Also, please don't forget to subscribe so you can always get the latest episodes. You can also connect with us on Facebook, How Did They Do It Real Estate. We'd love to hear your feedback and any topics that you're interested in for future episodes. If you're anything like Zayla and me and believe that real estate investing is a great way to create passive income and build long-term wealth, check out our free apartment syndication due diligence checklist for passive investors at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Zayla and I created this checklist for ourselves as we evaluated different multifamily syndication opportunities as a passive investor. So we would love to share it with you so you can use it as a resource as well. Download your free copy today at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Lastly, to learn more about us, you can go to bonavestcapital.com and fill out the contact us page so you can speak to us directly. Nothing on the show should be considered as specific personal advice. Please consult your legal, tax, and real estate professionals for individualized advice.